ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Welcome to the program and Happy New Year to you. My name's Fiona Broom. Lovely to have your company this New Year's Day. The Territory's very own Tom Curtin will be on your radio today. He'll tell you all about what he's got planned for 2026. And I've got some brand new music to play for you today as well.
It's been something of a privilege to live our lives with you. Looking out our back door, you make us all true blue.
A tribute to the legendary John Williamson coming your way this New Year's Day. And if you thought that we'd left the word tariff behind in 2025, well, China's got news for you. China has slapped a new 55% tariff on Aussie beef imports above a certain quota. I'll tell you more about that over the next half hour.
Damn!
The Darwin River Dam has spilled. About 200 millimetres of rain fell in December across Darwin's catchments, and that's tipped the Darwin River Dam over the edge. Power and Water's Danny Brown says it's the earliest recorded spill since the dam's wall was raised in 2010.
Overnight, obviously, we had some nice rain last night. The dam had just been sitting there, just getting ready to spill. But last night, it did actually finally overtop the spillway. It's currently going over about 13 millimetres is what's going over the spillway, just a little bit less than 1.5 centimetres. So it's just trickling over nicely as we speak.
So do we know what time that happened? Was it in 2025 or 2026?
It was in 2025.
Okay.
So it was, I think it was about 4:35 o'clock yesterday, roughly. We do have very accurate monitoring equipment that does monitor the levels of the dam, but sometimes you can get a little bit of wave action on the water from the wind, and that makes the data a little bit bouncy sometimes.
So is it just using the water level sensors to kind of estimate when the spill occurred, or do you have video monitoring of the spillway itself?
No, we don't actually have a video monitor. It's something that we have been looking into and planning to do, to possibly put a time-lapse camera on the spillway so we can actually have very accurate data of when it does spill and as it rises. An interesting thing we did have over Cyclone Fema, the dam did come up roughly about 800 millimetres in that 24-hour period. So the dam did rise very quickly over that cyclone event, which would have been absolutely fantastic to capture that on a time-lapse camera. So it is something we're definitely looking into.
And just how unusual is it to see the dam spill this early in the wet season?
Yeah, well, I've been in my current role for 15 years now, and I've never seen it spill this early. It is obviously very refreshing for Power and Water to know that we're going into the year with a full reservoir. We've got a full belly of water there, so that's exciting for us. And we know that we can keep supplying safe drinking water to the township of Darwin.
I'm sure people who live near the spillway are pretty used to this happening in the wet season. But when it happens, what do people downstream need to be aware of?
Yeah, obviously, it is the Darwin River. When the dam releases, it does go into the Darwin River, and those do feed into some other creeks around in that area. So, yeah, people in the area do need to be mindful of those creek rises. Obviously, you don't want to cross flooded creeks and those things like that. So, but there definitely will be an increase in river and stream heights in that lower area of the dam.
But not sort of a dangerous level of inundation anywhere?
Yeah, and it's not rapid. It will increase slowly, so it's not like you'd see a wall of water come down those creeks. So it is, when the dam does release, it releases over a very large area, and that's engineered to do that. And so it definitely will have, river increases. It's just something I think the residents and people that travel around those areas just need to be mindful of.
Also, just looking at the map of Darwin's water supply network, there are some bores out towards the Howard East area. Are they still being used to balance the dams, or do they actually also help meet Darwin's water demand?
Yeah, we've currently got 10 bores out in the rural area, out in the Howard East and the Girraween area there. They do supplement our water supply. We do have them in an emergency. If we had an issue out at Darwin River Dam, we can, you know, keep Darwin in some form of water supply in the event of an incident. But currently, when the dam spills, we do turn the bores off. We basically keep one bore running, and that just keeps the pipe charged, and that just assists us with water quality. But the bore filter's also gone through a recharge event at the moment, so all the bores in that area are nice and full as well as we do head into the new year.
That's Danny Brown from Power and Water Corporation speaking there with Sam Parry. Just looking at the Darwin River Dam level, it's currently sitting at 100.06% capacity. And interesting to look at previous years. So this day in 2025, the Darwin Dam, 76.73%. And the 1st of Jan in 2024, it was sitting at 75.88%. So certainly a lot of water in the Darwin River Dam there. And as you heard, if you're downstream, the Darwin River Dam is currently spilling. Well, a huge amount of rain has fallen across Queensland in recent days. More than a metre of rain fell at Ryan Sprager's barramundi farm near Mission Beach, south of Cairns. He says the barra ponds have been filling up, but happily, they haven't spilled.
Over the last week, we've had approximately 1,100 mil. So it's quite a lot, yeah.
What impact does that have on a barramundi farm aquaculture when it rains like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we get a lot more with the ponds, you know, obviously they could go over. But we have mitigated the risks this year from, we've learnt a lot from the rain event in February this year. And we put extra overflows in. So this year was fine. We didn't lose any fish it was really good. So.
What happened in February? Yep. What happened to the farm in that?
So the ponds went over and we lost quite a few fish down into the creek. So, but this year, all good this year. So we've put extra overflows in and, happy days.
Yeah, so that overflow really has made a difference.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yep. And also the erosion around the banks as well. When the ponds go over, they can actually take out a whole bank with them and that. So this year, happy days. We can handle a bit more water.
Yeah, and so how have things been on the farm? What sort of other impacts does the rain bring?
We have a tourism business here as well. So we're a commercial farm. We sell about 20 tonne of barramundi a year, but we also are a tourism farm. So people can come in and catch a fish, take it home, eat it if they want, or catch and release. But at the moment, after 1,100 mils of rain, it's just a mud pile. So it does affect us. There's a fair few people in town for Christmas and New Year's at the moment. We've had a few phone calls saying they cancel and that sort of stuff. But we did have some people brave it in the rain. There's a few people here now catching a few. And, we had people just stripping off yesterday in their jocks fishing in the rain. It was pretty fun. So, yeah.
So even in the rain, this is the place, this is a place to go when it's rainy. You can't exactly get out in the water.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, these guys here now, they're from Charters Towers and they drove their boat up. In Mission Beach, hoping to go out to the reef and, couldn't get out there. It's a bit messy out there at the moment. So, next best thing, come to the Barra Farm and catch a few,
How do the fish sort of react when the weather's like this?
Well, the barometer's going a bit crazy at the moment with all the storms. And the water temp has dropped a little bit as well, so it has slowed them down for sure, yeah. They're just not as aggressive at the moment. You know, but prior to the rain we've just had, people were coming in catching 30 or 40 fish in an hour, but these guys here, they're probably only going to catch about, 10. So it has slowed them up a lot, yeah.
That overflow that you've put in, how much water can that handle?
It's 250 millimetre pipes at the moment. So, quite a lot. It still did go over. I will put another one in during the dry season, but at the moment it's fine. It can handle it. So
if there was another 300 mil in the next 24 hours, would it still be able to handle it? You reckon?
I think so. Yesterday was really good. So the day before we got 345 mil, And that's the day when it was, yeah, a little bit touch and go. But yesterday was fine when we got 300 mil, so they handled it pretty well.
Is there any risk of crocs here at the Barra Farm with the ponds in the rain?
Well, of course there is a risk, yeah. It's the time of year where the crocs go walking. We haven't had any here yet, and fingers crossed. But I do checks every night with a spotlight, just to make sure, because we do have little kids fishing here all the time, so sort of got to be on the front foot with that sort of stuff. So, so far so good.
That's Queensland barramundi farmer Ryan Sprager speaking with Sophie Johnson. So happily, his barra ponds haven't spilled with all that rain that has been falling across Queensland. There could be more rain on the way in the Gulf of Carpentaria, which has already seen a huge amount of water in the past few days. At Sawtell Creek near Normanton, grazier Ashley Gallagher said the clouds are cleared up enough to get a chopper out to move some cattle to higher ground, and that's also meant they've been able to keep an eye on the crocs.
We're still surrounded by floodwaters. They've just not going up as fast anymore. Like, they're just very, very slowly. It's only risen like 4 centimetres in the last 12 hours, so pretty steady in that way, but still a lot of water around. And luckily there's a couple of helicopters on the ground now, and we've shifted a lot of cattle out to higher ground. So,
and is that in, you know, over a number of properties?
No, he's been flying here at Sawtell Creek, but we've shifted some down at another block that family owned called Woodview, and then I know he's been to Broadwater, I know he's been to Shady Lagoon, and he's been to Mutton Hole shifting cattle. So
been very busy. And has he described what it's looking like from up in the sky, the damage to Sawtell Creek?
A lot of it's underwater. It's not looking good upstream. Like you said, there's a lot of dirty water which coming from upstream, which means that, there's some coming from probably out of the Flinders River, and that dirty water, we normally get clean water come through. So, yeah, that doesn't help. That means the Flinders is overflowing into the Norman, which isn't a good thing.
Do you have any idea of losses at this point?
No, not really. We did come across a cow floating down the river near Normanton. You know, there's still a chance that she might find high ground somewhere, but that's probably one that you can write off. With a bit of luck, most of them got out. Good old Brahman cattle, they know how to swim and they know how to survive. So they, some of them, the pilot was saying yesterday that some of them would actually have a bit of a rest up against a tree and just lay there and float for a while, and then they'd pick their way through and keep going. He was pretty confident that most of them got out.
Yeah. Okay.
He did have an incident with some cattle that I'll tell you about. He went to shift some cows off a ridge, and when they walked into the water, there was a hell of a commotion, and they all shot back under the helicopter. And he said there was 4 big salties laying in the water, laying in wait. So he actually just left those ones on that little island.
Yeah, dealing with crocodiles on top of everything else.
Yeah.
Not what you need. There are models that are showing the potential for a tropical low developing next week. It's still a bit too early to know for sure, but how concerned are you about another system coming over and dropping more rain?
I mean, it'd be disastrous if that happened. This needs a couple of weeks to run away. That's something that we don't need.
You're also part of the SES in Normanton, so what have you been up to with that?
We actually went across this morning, and there's a truck on the other side. We bought in some bread and milk into town. I don't know which shop or anything like that, where it's going to. I think it might actually be destined for Corumba in the end. But, just waiting really for the Gilbert River to go down and the road to open up at between Croydon and Georgetown, so that we can get a telehandler down here, and then we can load full pallets onto the boats and start getting some supplies into town. But
have you been
at this stage, we're just waiting for that river to go down.
In your travels, being out and about, how are people feeling? This, you know, system has already sat over the Gulf for a week and it's still raining a little bit. Like, are people just exhausted?
People are, I think they're more worried about what's coming with all the rain around Cloncurry and Julia Creek. Like, that's it's sort of like, geez, we hope this stuff gets away a little bit before that arrives. Yeah, still a bit worried about that. You know, if we get some water coming out of the Flinders in a big way down the Norman, it can flood some areas of town. So, yeah, it's sort of a wait and see as to how much water's up there.
That's Ashley Gallagher from Sawtell Creek Station near Normanton in Queensland. He was speaking with Hannah Walsh. How's that? Salties circling around the cattle there. No good. Hopefully not too much rain on the way. As you heard Ashley saying there, that country there will not handle too much more rain if it is on the way. 1:15 here on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. China has announced a 55% tariff on Aussie beef going over 200,000 tonnes. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But first, a brand new song dedicated to the legendary John Williamson has just been released. It's called Something of a Privilege, and it was written as a tribute to John Williamson for his 80th birthday and for his contributions to Australian music. It's performed by Lindsay Waddington and Brendan Radford. And both Brendan Radford and John Williamson have been nominated for Traditional Country Album of the Year in this year's Golden Guitar Awards, which will be announced on the 24th of January. The Territory's very own Tom Curtin is also in contention for Best Traditional Country Album this year. And Tom Curtin's going to be on your radio after 1:00. But before then, let's hear it for the very first time on the Country Hour. Something of a Privilege.
Been something of a privilege, mate, to live our lives with you.
That's Lindsay Waddington and Brendan Radford with their tribute to John Williamson, Something of a Privilege. 1:50 on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this New Year's Day. I hope you are not feeling too dusty. Well, if you thought the word tariff was going to be left behind in 2025, think again. China has slapped a 55% tariff on Australian beef shipments that go over a quota of around 200,000 tonnes per year. Brazil and the US will also face tariffs when their beef exports to China exceed certain quotas. And meat and livestock analyst Simon Quilty told Annie Brown that's going to mean there's going to be a whole lot of beef looking for new markets.
It's deeply disappointing, but the real concern lies with, I think, the quality end of the market. So chilled beef programs, this is really disruptive to it because the chances are we're likely to hit that safeguard sometime in May or June. And that's in part due to what we call the rush to the door effect, Annie, where exporters will try to get the benefits early because it's on a first-in, first-served basis. And so you then tend to fill these quotas or safeguards quickly. And then suddenly for the back end of the year, you've got a 55% tariff in place, and it's extremely difficult to put a chilled beef program in place to ship consistently through the year when it becomes cost prohibitive in the back end of the year. So it's that quality end of the market. It's chilled. It will be both grass-fed and grain-fed, but I think grain-fed in particular will be the one I think hit the most.
So do you think we're likely to see, I guess, I don't know, like a pile of chilled beef at the end of the year looking for a new market?
No, I think, you know, the market will look to allocate resources earlier than that. So it will be a matter of just finding new homes. But the problem then, you know, becomes that we're not the only one in this situation, Annie. So you've got Brazil, who this year, in 2025, shipped near on 1.6 million tonnes, and they're suddenly being drawn back to a 1.1 million allocation. So there's 500,000 tonnes that in 2026 will have to find a new home from Brazil. We look at Argentina, it's a similar story. There's 50,000 tonnes that will need to find a new home. And from an Australian point of view, I think it's closer to probably 50 to 60,000 tonnes that needs to find a new home. So we're all out there at the same time. And if you add that up, Annie, that's 600,000 tonnes globally that needs to find a new home. So not only is it disruptive to the flow of chilled and other products, but then when you go to find other markets, you're now competing with more beef because others are impacted in the same way.
So what led China to make this decision?
So that came about a year ago, almost to the day, where effectively the farmers within the livestock sector of China laid claim that they were being truly adversely affected by the huge amount of imports that were occurring into that market. And in actual fact, they, you know, said they were running at a loss. The year in particular was 2023, in which they were incurring enormous import volumes, and their return on investment was in the negative. That's where this all came about because of.
And does China obviously bring this cap on it? Like, are they don't need this much beef anymore? Is that also what's happening? They're going to try and use their own more?
It's a really good question, Annie. We would say that their demand still is still there. It's just that they're looking at ways and means to protect their farmers. But I would say the ultimate impact is going to be higher beef prices, both domestic and imported, within China itself. So, Annie, here we were chatting a week ago about how US quotas or tariffs were beneficial to Australia. And ironically, a week later, we're now talking about really how I think, you know, this is going to be bad news for the Australian beef exports and what, you know, detrimental effect it will have on the market.
So with this global supply of chilled beef looking for new markets, are we obviously likely to see some prices drop?
I think, Annie, you know, there's a couple of things in our favour, but to answer your question, yes, that could be the outcome here. What we do have in our favour is that America, Brazil, and Australia move into rebuild. So I think, you know, last year in 2025, a lot of that was due to liquidation that was going on across these countries, the large volumes. And so the net effect is that some of the expected allocation or volumes for 2026 may not be as great as we move down the path to rebuild, as females are retained and, you know, therefore less export volume around the world. And if there is an impact, it will be felt in the back end of the year. Not only Australia, but all these other countries are likely to fill their allocation by mid-year, and therefore we're going to see that excess product on the market in the back end of the year. So when do I really see potentially an impact on cattle pricing? It could be in the back end of the year, not necessarily the front end of the year.
From your experience and understanding, Simon, what's the likelihood of China changing their decision or changing this tariff, their mind?
I would say, Annie, that the first year of this program, which finishes on December 31st, 2026, there will be probably very little change. And what they'll reflect back on is how high domestic prices go. If they go extremely high, then it will be a similar approach to Donald Trump, who is fighting huge inflation costs in America. Beef is a big worry, and therefore they removed in America tariffs on imports. They lowered them in the hope that this would lower domestic pricing. I would hope a similar approach might be taken by China in year two and three of this program. But so the difference may well be that 55% duty gets reduced dramatically. But it's speculation, Annie. We don't know.
That's meat and livestock analyst Simon Quilty speaking there with Annie Brown. And the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, was asked whether the Australian government knew that China's new tariff on Australian beef was coming. Here's what he had to say.
We are communicating with our counterparts. This is something that wasn't Australia being singled out. This is a general position that China has put. We are advocating, as we always do, for Australian industry.
What sort of an impact do you expect it's going to have on the industry?
Well, we, of course, this is an announcement that is across the board, so it doesn't impact Australia, isn't being singled out here. Australian beef is, in my view, proudly, as the Australian Prime Minister, the best in the world. We compete in the world very well, and our products are in great demand right around the world. We expect that will continue to be so. The Australian beef industry has never been stronger than it is today as we enter 2026.
That's the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, on the new Chinese tariffs on Australian beef, going above about 200,000 tonnes. Coming up to 1 o'clock here on the Country Hour, we're going to head to the newsroom very soon, speaking to the Weather Bureau, as always, at 1:05. And then Tom Curtin is going to be on your radio. But first, let's check in on the roads. Sam Parry, how are the roads looking out there today?
Yeah, still a lot of closures out in the east of the territory following that system that moved towards the Gulf Country last week. But the big ones to take note of, I guess, are the Plenty Highway. That's impassable between Jervois Station and the Queensland border.
Mm-hmm.
North of there, the Sandover Highway is also still closed from the boundary of Amaru and El Kedra stations all the way to Queensland border. And in the Barkly, Calvert and the Barkly Stock Route still closed as well.
Yep.
Also, Rankin Road, which connects the Tablelands Highway to the Barkly Highway around Avon Downs, is closed. Other roads south of there also closed. And a number of road closures in the top end as well, just seasonal, as you'd expect, Cales Crossing and some others around Arnhem Land.
Yep. Sam, thank you very much, and Happy New Year, and welcome to Team Rural. You're officially part of the team now.
Yeah, 2026, looking forward to it. It should be a good year.
All righty, coming up to 1 o'clock, time to head over to the newsroom. I'll be back with you at 1:05.
Hi, I'm Nigel McGrath. I'm Sanctuary Manager at Wongalara Wildlife Sanctuary for Australian Wildlife Conservancy, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Welcome back to the program, and Happy New Year to you. I'm Fiona Broom. Lovely to have your company today. In just a moment, Catherine's very own Tom Curtin will be along to say g'day. He'll tell you what he's got planned for 2026. Let's now go to the Weather Bureau, find out what's happening with the weather. Sally Cutter's with you this afternoon. G'day, Sally.
Good afternoon.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to you too.
How's it looking out there, Sally, on this 1st of January? Have we got a few more showers expected across the north?
Oh, certainly. We've got showers and storms. They've moved through the daily, starting to head into the Arnhem. And then we've also got the ones along the north coast as well. And we're even starting to see the odd storm down in the far southern southwest corner of the Simpson District. So right down near the border near Kalgoorlie, we're seeing some storms already. And there's probably going to be a few. There's a bit of a line that sort of looks like it's just gone through, go East Giles, and it's starting to bubble. So you might see some down in the Leicester District in the next couple of hours as well.
Mm, okay. There was some excellent thunder happening around Darwin last night.
Yeah, we've just got this onshore flow, and monsoon, and during the monsoon, generally, if it's read the textbook, it says it should be overnight and into the morning. We are seeing showers coming on and storms coming out there at the moment, coming onshore. So once they hit the land, that makes sense, some extra little kick. But, yeah, overnight is when you get the most favourable time over water to get the storms.
Yeah. Are those sort of showers and storms expected to continue into the weekends, or are they going to clear up?
In the north, yes, they will continue. We've got a trough that sort of sits somewhere around about the northern Barkly down into the Tanami-Gregory sort of border area. And that's sort of just going to be fairly slow moving. So we've got these westerly winds to the north. So we're going to see those showers and storms continuing. Down south, we do have a trough coming through on Saturdays. And so it might get a little bit windier to the southeasterly. It will dry out a little bit. And then that will sort of help clear those showers and or contract them northwards. Possibly not right out of the Barkly Tanami, but certainly clear the Leicester and Simpson districts and the southern Tanami.
How are temperatures looking, Sally? I think we've got some hot days ahead right across the territory.
Yeah, the hot to very hot. We're sort of down, once you get south of that Tennant Creek, we're starting to see some very hot temperatures. So they're above 40 degrees. So, but even then, we've got a lot of temperatures in the high 30s. So if you're sort of heading, if you're in Alice Springs, we're looking at 36 today. We're getting up to, on Sunday, to 39, 41 on Monday. If you're down at Culgra, we're looking at 37 and again, sort of 41s. Tennant Creek, we're looking at a top of 35 today, but 37 tomorrow, 40 by Sunday. Mm. So there's some certainly really hot temperatures up there.
Yeah. Sally, anything else that we need to know with the weather today and across the next few days?
No, that's really bad. Just be aware that we could still see some heavy falls in the Gregory for the next 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But generally, we're looking at those showers and storms across the northern half and in the south until we get to late in the weekend.
Lovely. Sally Cutter, thank you very much for your time on the Country Hour today and Happy New Year. Looking forward to a wonderful 2026.
Thanks very much.
Sally Cutter there at the Bureau of Meteorology. It is just gone 1:09 on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you today. Tom Curtin, the legendary Tom Curtin, he's come along to say good day. He's going to be on your radio next.
Hello, my name is Julie Roy, acting coordinator for Eagle Monkey Rangers, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
The Territory's very own Tom Curtin. Welcome to the Country Hour. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Fiona. Are you having a good one?
Yeah, got the dust has come off a little bit, feeling good today. How are you feeling?
Yeah, great. Down here in Queensland, Mum and Dad's place, so it's all going well.
Beautiful. Tom, you're up for a couple of Golden Guitar Awards in just a few weeks' time. That's for your album, Here's to You. You're nominated alongside John Williamson in one of those categories. Holy dooly.
Yeah, it's a bit humbling. John Williamson's been, I remember seeing him in the Kingaroy Town Hall when I was about 6 years old and with my family, and I thought, man, that'd be great to do one day. So to be up against him, it's a bit of an honour, but I'm not holding my breath because, you know, he's an absolute legend. So, yeah, it's just to be in the final five for the traditional album. It's pretty amazing. So to be, going along to Tamworth and the red carpet and all that, it's, pretty exciting.
We'll talk a bit more about the Golden Guitars very soon. Before we get into that, though, Tom, you've been flat chat over the past 12 months. Tell us what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, earlier in the year, we just finished off a seven-month tour, got back to Katherine, I think, mid-April. And then shot to Sydney. I always try to write songs on the tour in my truck. And shot to Sydney in the studio there, recorded another five songs. We started about 1st of May with the Katherine Outback Experience in Katherine. And there for 5 months. I think we did 250 shows all on there with school visits and travellers coming through the Katherine region. A few concerts here and there we had to fly out to, but then we packed up and headed onto the road. We've done over to Cairns, down the coast to Kingaroy in Queensland. So we did about 28 shows from Katherine to Cairns to Kingaroy with, 10 horses and goats and four musicians in the family. So, it's been full on. We released a new album, Here's to You, I think in October. A new kids book came out the other day, first one. I wrote, just in conjunction with Dolly's Dream, $5 goes to Dolly's Dream, called Snow Speaks Up, all about our animals in Katherine and just a Dolly's Dream message. So it's been a pretty hectic year, but we like it like that.
Yeah. How's your 2026 looking? Are you going to be on the road as much this year, or will you have a bit more territory time in your schedule?
I'd love a bit more territory time, but I think, we go from here, we sort of head to Tamworth Country Music Fest, and we're on the road for another 3 or 4 months, around to Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, then back up through the centre, get back to Katherine mid-April, and shoot back to Sydney, record some more songs, and we're back in Katherine then from sort of May to the end of September, and then we're already planning the next tour, which could possibly head to WA as well. But, it's pretty full on, but I just take sort of one day at a time, you know, and don't get too overwhelmed about it at all.
What's the thing you're looking forward to most in 2026?
I think I love the travelling, to be honest. Luckily, my wife Annabelle loves it too. We meet a lot of people, a lot of country towns we visit. We do like 70 shows each tour roughly, and so meeting the people and hearing their stories, and then even in Katherine, getting back there, we love also doing the shows there, but we do want to try to do a few more camp drafts. We only get to the last few years, we only got to about 2 camp drafts a year, and we really love training horses. It's great catching up with all those managers and ringers and people, the locals up there, you know. We go so flat out, and we've got such big commitments that we've got to, you know, keep on track of. In Katherine, we want to try to possibly slow it down a little so we can get out a bit. So that's a bit of a juggling act. But, the camp drafts are a major social gathering and great to catch up with people.
Yeah. As if you're not busy enough, though, already, Tom, you want to add camp drafting into the mix.
Yeah, no, it is good. It's just great for your head to get out. And we love doing it. And we used to do a lot more of it. But we've been hamstrung a little with shows and things. So, we'll try to get out and, I don't know, there's something in the territory and the people and the relaxed vibe, you know. I started singing back in 2001 at Pussycat Boar out near Top Springs.
Yep.
And I went out to a camp draft there and on the show, I think I was in Comet in Queensland the other day, and these people came up and said, "Hey, mate, we saw you in 2001 at Pussycat Boar camp draft and you're singing with a guitar. You only knew about 2 chords and you had everyone sort of entertained, and we just love it. We tell everyone about that." I said, "Mate, I still only know about 2 chords, but I love, you know, meeting people." And but it took me back to those days, and you know, the territory people, and they really backed me from, you know, gave me a lot of support back then. So it's I think it's, you know, it keeps you very grounded to get back out there and hear people's stories and be around that again.
Yeah. Well, those 2 chords seem to be serving you pretty well, because, of course, you will be kicking off 2026 with the Golden Guitar Awards. They are just a few weeks away. So your album, Here's to You, it's nominated for Traditional Country Album of the Year and Album of the Year. We'll talk about the inspiration for the album in a moment, but let's hear a track from the album first. Tom, what's your favourite song off this record?
Well, yeah, I think there's one called Big Red. It's Gary Riggs from Lakefield Station there, just out of Katherine, told me a story about one of his mates being attacked by a bantam rooster. And I thought, bam, there's a little song title. And had a bit of yarn to him. And so he inspired this song called Big Red. And on tour, it's sort of a comical song. I embellished it a little, but it's mainly in the same groove. And, yeah, a lot of people are raving about this song. We just got T-shirts made up with a big picture of a rooster on the front of it. So, I'll have to send one back up to Gary and say thanks for the song.
Embellishment in country music? Surely not, Tom.
Well, you know, you got to take, you know, a political sense of entitlement here and there and write a few more words down. But no, basically along the same line of what Gary told me. So, and a lot of interviews I've told the same story. So a lot of people are hearing about Gary and Lakefield Station and this famous bantam rooster.
All righty, here it is, Big Red from Tom Curtin.
Well, Jimmy had a bantam rooster, hand-raised and all corn-fed. Pretty small bird, all feathers, no fur, and went by the name Big Red. Grew up pretty quick from a feathery chick, but he had a real short fuse. If you pushed his buttons, he'd start strutting, cause he didn't like to lose. Now Bob came over one Sunday arvo, one of Jimmy's friends. He laughed out loud when he saw how proud this rooster was with his hens. So you're saying this fella with the red tail feather would attack if across the line? No laughing matter, he's mad as a hatter, but step up and give him a try. You can hear that random rooster crowing. Cock-a-doodle-doo. You can hear that bantam rooster crowing. Cock-a-doodle-doo. It's not the size of the bird in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the bird. You can hear that bantam rooster crowing. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Up to the bird and said, what's up, to get it moving. Big Red spun round and without a sound charged and got his groove on. He flew through the sky like a crazy guy, landed on old Bob's back. There was a hoot and holler hanging from the collar, now Bob was under attack. Bob was screeching, madly leaping, waving his hands in the air. Shaking the flutter, he did a runner, ran into the old grey mare. She knocked him over, shirt ripped open, Big Red hung on strong. Bob covered in dung, scratched up tons, it was on like Donkey Kong. You can hear that bantam rooster crowing, cock-a-doodle-doo. Yelping, the bird not helping, headed to the water trough. Just about had it, covered in claret in the water to get him off. A little bit western, Bob learned a lesson, he thought he knew his stuff. Too much to chew, got the scars to prove, the day he picked that rooster. You can hear that bantam rooster crowing, cock-a-doodle-doo.
That's Big Red from Tom Curtin's newest album, Here's to You. Fiona Broom with you on the Country Hour this New Year's Day, and you are joined by Tom Curtin. Tom, your album is up for a couple of 2026 Golden Guitar Awards, including Traditional Country Album of the Year. Tell me about the inspiration for this album.
Yeah, I suppose I just, I love travelling, I love hearing people's stories, so I'm always going out of my way to hear people's stories, and there's so many out here, and I just try to write them down, put them into a song so the rest of the country can hear them. So the whole album, you know, we did Top End Tough, talking up the top end again with Luke O'Shea and Sarah Stora, a collection of great artists up there, Melanie Gray, Dave Garnham, Chris Matthews from Kununurra came in. So did that song up there, and then did obviously the Big Red for a bit of comedy. Always put one of them on, and then we've got a few other ballads. So I met this fella down in southern WA called Bucket, and I heard his story about how his mother rode 6 days heavenly pregnant with him on the back of a horse into Derby Hospital. Had a lot of trouble having him. They thought he was dead as a baby, so they threw him in a bucket. And a couple of minutes later, he started kicking. And he came back to life, and his mother was very sick, so she had to stay in hospital for a while. His dad rode him back out on the pommel of his saddle, 6 days back out, got raised up by the Indigenous mob out there at Fitzroy Crossing. He was a drover, so he learned how to catch goannas and barramundi and how to great time getting raised up in that environment. They called him the Bucket Baby. And years later, he went back up to, he got married himself, went back up through Western Australia. And, yeah, he sort of went back and met the lady called Maisie, who became his Indigenous mother, raised him up. And, yeah, and I said, well, what did Maisie do? And he said, well, Maisie never called me the Bucket Baby. She just called me son. And I thought, man, that's a killer line. So we wrote the song Bucket Baby with good mate Luke O'Shea. It's an honest song, and for me that's the kicker. It's just writing these powerful, true stories that every time I get up to sing them, I get goosebumps because I know it's real and I'm not just singing just a cover song. It's something that means something to someone. And to go back down there, we played it to Bucket and his wife on a farm in southern WA and reduced them to tears, but it's a song for them and they can play it for their grandkids as well. It's pretty awesome.
Mm. Well, the storytelling, your stories that you're telling are obviously striking a chord. You've got these nominations for the Golden Guitar Awards. You're nominated alongside another legendary storyteller, John Williamson. There's also Brendan Radford, Brendan Walmsley, Dean Perrott. How does it feel to be shortlisted alongside some of the greats of today's country music, some of the great storytellers in country music?
Yeah, it's very humbling, to be honest. It's, you know, you always try your best to put out an album and see how the response is. Always very daunting, you know, how the public receives it. But thankfully it's, you know, struck a bit of a chord with people out there. And, yeah, honestly, it's, I'm not holding my breath to win anything, but just to be in that company, it's phenomenal, you know. So they're all great mates. I know John Williamson pretty well. He's a great fellow, always says g'day. And, you know, the other guys, Brendan Radford, often played extremely good musician, played on my albums. Brendan Walmsley, beautiful person. His brothers were in my band years ago. He's from Roma in Queensland. And Dean Perrott's a Kingaroy boy, so I grew up with Dino. He does a lot of country music festivals through the area. And, you know, so I think there's a great connection with the artists themselves. It's a great country music family. Over first went to Tamworth back in 2003. We won a singing contest near Adelaide River there. Got me into the Country Music Academy, which is a two-week course where you meet Becky Cole and Casey Chambers and they tutorial you on the ins and outs of the country music world. There's about 20 other artists there. And, yeah, so to come through that and put out the first album back in 2004, smack bang, in the middle of the territory, I wrote a song about that. And you meet all these other artists over the years at festivals and concerts and touring through the country. So it's just very, very grounding, very humbling to be there. And, yeah, so it's going to be cool. I think my wife's very excited because she gets to buy a new dress and gets all frocked up, you know, for the red carpet. But we'll have to dust off the old boots and see how we go.
Well, look, yeah, if nothing else, Tom, it seems like being in Tamworth is just a good old knees up.
That's right. You get a few days off and it's a great catch-up ground for a lot of, because we're normally, see, touring or in the territory and we don't get to catch up with all those other artists or radio presenters or a lot of the fans down there. So it's great to, catch up with them and fat.
Tom Curtin, all the best for 2026. You're going to have a massive year. We look forward here on the Country Hour to following your escapades throughout the year. But it is New Year's Day today. What's on your playlist today, Tom? Are you going for something with a bit of energy or are you keeping it a bit low-key and relaxed?
Yeah, well, today I've got to get fired up a bit, get a bit motivated. So to be back in the saddle by Luke Coombs. And Happy New Year out there to everyone else.
Many thanks to Tom Curtin for his time on the Country Hour today. It is coming up to 1:30. That is all the time we have on the Country Hour. Happy New Year to you. My name's Fiona Broom. Thanks for your company today. I'll be back with you on the radio tomorrow. Keep it rural.